time to start your fun day with an hour of the Gigi Brown Experience.
Sunday morning brings the dawn in. Who knows how long I've loved you? Do you know I love you still? Will I wait a lonely lifetime? If you want me to, I will. For if I ever saw you, I didn't catch your name. But it never really mattered. I will always feel the same. Love you forever and forever. Love you with all my heart. Love you whenever we're together. Love you when we're apart. And when at last I find you, your song will fill the air. Sing it loud so I can hear you. Make it easy to be near you. For the things you do endear you to me. Oh, you know I will.
All right. Good morning, Montreal, and welcome back to the Gigi Brown Experience. That was I Will by the Beatles. And I played that song because I love getting Beatles-themed reels or just anything Beatles-related on social media. And I saw a reel last night as I was doom-scrolling. It interrupted my feed, and it was basically saying that the bass line in that song is actually Paul McCartney singing. And so I went and I listened to the song, and yeah, it is. And I think that's such a nice added touch. It's such a romantic song. And so having that, I think, is very nice. So I decided to play that this morning. Good morning. It is very sunny. It is less smoky this morning, which is great. We missed Whale Tales on CBC this morning on our drive-in. We normally get to hear this little story about whales out in BC in the 70s. And we missed it this morning. So I'm out of order this morning. But it's okay because I have an incredible show. I recently got to sit down and talk to Honora. And as many of you know, I absolutely adore Honora. I love Closer Than Hell, her EP. And she has such an incredible voice and is very talented. So I was very lucky to sit down and talk to her about the EP and about the tour that she's going on this summer. And again, she's coming to the Jazz Fest June. Oh, I'm blanking. We talk about it in the interview. I believe it's June 29th. But don't quote me on that. We'll come back and talk about it. Anyways, I'm going to start the show off with my favorite song of hers, which is Maddie. And then I will just go right into the interview and then I'll come back and talk. But as you can hear, my voice is gone. We've had many events this week. I graduated high school. My little brother graduated elementary school. So there was lots of cheering and crying this week. And so my voice is out of it. So perfect week to be airing a pre-recorded interview. Anyways, here's Maddie, and I will be back later. Enjoy the interview.
Okay, so say something about your first day of school.
When I was in grade one on my first day of school, it was horrible. Nobody wanted to play with me.
What about you?
Does a 10-year-old know about love? Please excuse my distrust. Think that the teacher sat me next to you so I could hear I was beautiful. Could it be a little joke? Just
The decades come and gone, my friend. And what have I learned of love? Hope that the world has been kind to you. Hope you still say it's beautiful. And did you happen to recall?
Okay, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Just go ahead and introduce yourself for everyone listening.
My name is Honora, and I'm a singer, songwriter, and interdisciplinary artist based in Montreal.
Now, you are currently on, well, are you at home right now?
I'm home today, yes, but I am at the beginning of a tour right now, just around Quebec and Ontario, and so far it's going really well. Last night, I opened for Dominique Fils-Aimé at the Grand Théâtre in Quebec City. It was so lovely. So we're going to go back there for a full show with our band sometime in the fall.
That's so exciting. Yeah. Now, you do have shows booked all summer long. Do you have a favorite part of being on the road? Do you get to kind of treat it like a road trip?
Ooh, it depends on the setup. If we're a smaller crew, I feel like it's usually more chill. There are fewer moving parts. When it's all of us, though, when we're six on the road, I love the shows that we play. I love the energy on stage of six musicians on stage with me. It's so wonderful. I think my favorite thing, though, has got to be hitting the bed. Like being on the road, driving all day between the cities can be a little bit tough.
For sure.
But yeah, we're so blessed to get to do it and to meet all the wonderful people, the fans in every single city. They're such lovely people.
Nice. Is there a particular show or venue that you're most looking forward to playing at?
Ooh, on the 27th of June, I'm playing Lac Mégantic. After the disaster, there's this wonderful family who started kind of redeveloping the town, and they created a music venue out of an old church. It's called La Chapelle du Rond-Arn. And every time I play there, they're just so warm. And you'd think that more in the boonies in Quebec, there wouldn't be big fans of soul music, but they're so nice. Like they're so supportive and really engaged. The audience there is very engaged and warm and generous with their time. And I shake all the hands after, and they buy all the merch, and I sign everything. And they're just such kind fans. Yeah.
Awesome. We went to Lac Mégantic last summer, and
Oh.
I know that church that you're talking about. I had no idea it was a music venue. It's so beautiful on the outside.
It's stunning. Yeah. I've
Yeah.
played there 3 times now, and every time I'm just like, this rocks.
Nice. On the set list, is there a particular song that you enjoy playing live the most?
The most, oh, I have to think about that. Probably the new one, Heavenly One, is one that I'm really enjoying playing live. There are not a lot of big vocal moments on the EP, the new one, Closer Than Hell. But
Okay.
Heavenly One, something happened when we recorded the live session for it, where this vocal opening happened and this big sound came out, and I just really look forward to that moment in the set where I can really unleash everything and let it all out.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love Heavenly One. The particular line that I'm so curious about, the yellow and red have gone, blue makes me comfortable. What is that like listening to it personally? It kind of sounds like the passing of time, like the seasons changing, but I'm so curious what it actually means, like from your perspective.
Absolutely. So that was that. Those two lines were co-written with my friend Oren Lefkowitz of the project, Oscar Lewis and Chris Vincent. Oren helped me kind of tweak the lyrics a little bit on Heavenly One. And for us, the yellow and red, those are very vibrant, kind of warm, sort of springtime fall colors, and blue being kind of more wintry. There's definitely an element of the color draining from life, you know, and when I've lost my zest for life at different points in time, it's really easy to settle into a more depressive mode of thinking or defeatist attitude. And because the song is about sort of feeling uncomfortable with the freedom, new freedom after the ending of a really, really long relationship, it was kind of like, okay, I'm cool to just chill in these dark waters for a little bit before I start to kind of rebuild my life again, because it's scary to imagine a new future after such a big change, a big loss.
Yeah. Do you have any tricks that help you get your zest of life back?
Oh yeah, a very long list.
Yeah.
But quickly, the biggest ones that do it for me are dancing in my room in my underwear, very
Oh yeah.
important. Cooking elaborate meals for myself and sharing them with friends, and going on walks in parks in nature and hanging out with animals. Those things,
Yeah.
reconnecting with my loved ones, of course, those are things that really get me there quicker than anything else.
Okay, going back to the music, can you
Yes.
unpack the title a little bit for me? Because Closer Than Hell is also a lyric on that last track. So I assume there's a story there. Okay, yeah, I can see there is. Go ahead.
I love how perceptive and insightful you are.
Thank
Observant young one.
you.
Yeah, so the last track, Untitled, was the most laborious one for me and Max Fraser, the producer. We co-wrote it together. It was sort of a song that came out of another song that wasn't quite working, which came out of another song that wasn't quite working, and it took us months to get that one right. And the lyrics over and over again, just pouring over them, pouring over them. And really, what it came down to, what that song came down to, was okay, maybe I could be ready to dip my toe into the possibility of one day opening my heart up again to the maybe of love again after what I'd gone through. And in the bridge, I kind of feel like that was the moment everything stripped down and I got to the core of it, which was just like rehashing what Heavenly One is saying, is just be gentle with me this time, give me the strength to handle this and enjoy it, I guess. And so that lyric, keep me closer than hell, turn me loose into the dark, like unleash me into the unknown, and give me the courage stronger than God to accept the heaven, you know what I mean? It's, it kind of calls back to Heavenly One. So for me, the title, it's like the one thing that comes closer to my heart than the suffering that I've experienced in my life is love. That's always the thing that that conquers the darkness.
Before I ask this next question, I know the story about Baby Bell Boy because I follow you on Instagram, but could you quickly just repeat it for everyone who might not know the story?
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. So there was a boy in elementary school named Matthew, and he would pass me notes every day in class that said Belle on it, that I was beautiful. And one day he saw that I was crying because I was embarrassed. My fly had been down and some kids noticed and were laughing at me. So he pulled a Baby Bell out of his lunchbox and kind of wiggled it over to me on the desk and said, "Would Baby Bell cheer you up?" I'll never forget that moment. It was so nice. And like, as an adult trying to figure out dating on and off, like that kid had more game than most grown men that I've met in my life. So that, but the kindness of that gesture, the emotional intelligence, it's just a small thing, but I've just never forgotten it. And I remembered it because I was cleaning out the closet during COVID lockdown and had stumbled upon one of the notes that he'd written me and remembered the piles of them and just like, oh my God, the relationship I'm in now sucks. Like this is not what I wanted. And it actually gave me the strength to reconsider. So I wrote the song Maddie after that memory, and it gave me the courage to end the relationship and move on.
Wow. That's really powerful. Good for you.
Thanks.
Now, does Baby Bone Boy, does Matthew know that this song is about him?
I don't know. I've done so many interviews about this now, and I've drafted messages to send to him to be like, hey, years ago you were very kind and I wrote a song about it. It's making the rounds. It's inspiring people. But I don't know. Maybe today's the day. I just have to just rip the Band-Aid off and do it.
Yeah.
Just do I think it's time, especially because I'm going to be performing it at Jazz Fest this summer in front of all those people. And I feel like it would be good if he knew that that was happening.
That is such a perfect transition to my next question, because I was about to ask about the Jazz Fest. I'm so excited. June 29th, TD Stage. You, however, are no stranger to big festivals. You've played so many. Have you had a favorite?
That's a really good question. Favorite festival? Wow, there have been a lot. I've really enjoyed, I've played Jazz Fest a few times and that's always a blast. I've also really enjoyed playing Pop Montreal. I've done that a couple times and I opened for Mavis Staples in 2019. This is a long time ago now, but that was a legendary night. That was really, really special of seeing someone who is so on in years, still touring and inspiring audiences and connecting. I think as a woman, I feel like I'm starting to deal with some superstitions around age and the idea of expiry over a certain age and stuff. And that's hopefully not on your radar right now, but it does come up for a lot of female artists. And it was just really inspiring to see somebody say kind of hell with it and just keep doing her thing. That was really amazing.
Yeah. She's playing this summer, the Jazz Fest. Are you going to go see her?
Yes.
Oh, yay. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
Do you have a dream music festival? Like somewhere you haven't played yet, somewhere where like in the future you would really love to go?
Whoa. I think it's Montreux. I mix up Montreux and Monterey, but it's the one Etta James did. Montreux. So it's in France. That would be amazing. She did this version of I'd Rather Go Blind. That's in 1975. That was just so incredible. She's really sharing the song with the audience. They're singing it with her. She looks like she's drunk out of her mind, but it was still such an amazing vocal performance. She always inspires me. So being able to follow in her footsteps and play at Montreux would be incredible.
Something told me it was over, babe. when I saw you and that girl talking, babe. Something deep down in my soul said, go on and cry, girl. When I saw you and that same girl walking by,
oh, yeah.
And I would rather be a blind girl, babe. Than to see you walk away from me, baby.
Ah, yeah.
Cause you see, I love you so much. I don't wanna watch you leave me, babe. And another thing is, I just don't wanna be free. Now listen, I was just sitting here thinking, yeah, about your sweet kiss,
whoa, and your warm embrace, baby.
Oh, yeah. When the reflection in the glass that I held to my lips, baby, yeah. Reveal the tears that was on, oh, my face, yeah, babe.
Oh, yeah.
Baby, 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 I'd rather be a blind girl. Oh, I'd rather be a blind girl. And to watch you walk away from me, boy. Look out. I'd rather be a blind girl than to watch you walk away from me, baby. Don't leave. Now listen, I'm gonna tell y'all one more time. I was just sitting here a minute ago thinking, baby. I was thinking about your sweet kiss and your when I looked down in the glass that I held to my lips, I was looking in the glass and I saw the reflection of the tears rolling down my face. Oh, babe! Oh, babe! Oh, baby, I'd rather be a blind girl. Oh, Lord, baby, 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 don't leave me, boy. Thank you. I'd rather I don't wanna watch you leave me. I can't stand to see you go. Whoa, babe, I'd rather be a blind girl.
You've recently published this playlist on Spotify of all your inspiration. And I know Etta James is like an inspiration for you. But for this particular EP, what are you looking for? I guess I'm curious to know on that playlist, what really would strike inspiration through all these songs for you?
So this EP was a huge collaborative process between myself and the producer Max Fraser. He's from BC, has a hardcore like grunge, post-rock, indie punk background. And I'm this like soul singer-songwriter with a little folky thing, and it shouldn't work, but we got together and we demoed Maddie initially, and something about the kind of the lush wall of sound. He's also very classical music inclined, particularly the Russians. And so he had a really strong sensibility for texture and fullness, largeness, grandeur, and darkness and sound. And that really somehow added an emotionality and supported the stories that I was telling. So when we were going song by song, looking for sound, looking for the right synth, looking for the right guitar tone, the right drum pattern, we were just kind of both Rolodexing and on the apps, like, oh, have you heard this song? Have you heard that song? And went through all kinds of things from Sigur Rós and Sufjan Stevens, Angel Olsen, to like my favorite soul classics of Al Green and Lauryn Hill, and to things that you really wouldn't think, like David Bowie, just things from really all over, looking for the just the right thing that communicated the emotion behind the story of each song. And that man is an absolute encyclopedia of sounds. Is just next level when it comes to his meticulousness, looking for the right thing. And so it took almost a year to make the EP just because of the attention to detail there, but it was worth it. I'm so pleased with the results. So yeah, it's a mishmash of a playlist, but it really gives a sense of nobody's making art in a vacuum. Everybody is inspired by a variety of things, and we're not in 1975 anymore. So there's lots of music to draw inspiration from.
Now, when it's such a collaborative process, how does that work? Like, do you bring lyrics and then, what are you both bringing into the project?
It depends on the song. So when I brought him Maddie, he said, "That's perfect. Don't touch it. It's finished." And then we did end up adding the outro, which I kind of improvised the chords for at the end and improvised the lyrics for while we were in studio for it. Songs like Barbed Wire and Heavenly One, though, those two were kind of offshoots of songs that I brought to Max. And he was like, "You're an amazing artist and you're an amazing writer, and I know that you can write better than this. So let's get the song elevated to the level that you deserve." And then, which is devastating to hear, but ultimately very good. So then we would go together. He would try a new chord progression to add a new section. I would go into the other room and try to write some new lyrics. And we would just do that until we found something that worked. So it was very painful, but also I think that it made me a better songwriter.
Wonderful. Now, Barbed Wire specifically, I find the lyrics of that, they're so poetic. So it makes sense that it took that long to get there. But what is it about? Because to me, it's such a heartbreaking song.
Yeah. I was looking for symbols, images that felt like that felt like a sharp pang, that felt like there was betrayal, anger, loneliness, heartbreak for sure. And I feel like my sensation of heartbreak, it always feels like an abandonment in a strange way. It feels like there's something being ripped away because of the times that I attach too much of my personal sense of self or safety to a relationship, let's say. In this case, it was a friendship. And also my relationship to the music industry, not the music world, but the industry as a system that supports my creative happenings. So I was looking for like to me, circle and spire are two opposite things. A circle is flat and round, and a spire is something sharp that pierces. And I have felt like a pile of jello sometimes getting chopped up by an axe in the ending of that friendship and stuff. So I was looking for images that evoked that feeling. And I just listed them in my sketchbook, long, long, long list of things. And then I just did the ones that sounded the best from there. And barbed wire is a fun one because it's sort of like, it's symbol up to me, wire, it has to do with communication, attachment, connection. But barbed wire is really painful. And it's like you get the pain of not letting go, the pain of clinging and trying to control. So, yeah, it's kind of like that for me. And at the end, at the very end of the song, there are these lyrics that are sort of buried. I don't know if you can hear them. But that's kind of where I get my little dig in, where I say, couldn't believe that your love was so cheap. How you talk like it's fine while you make me a crime. Push and pull till the hinges run through and you tighten the screws so I'm cutting you loose. So it's kind of like talking about the cyclical nature of the dysfunction of the friendship and the sort of jab you both took at each other until it was time to separate, if that makes sense.
The description makes total sense to what you've just said. So kudos to your writing.
Hey, God, that was a 6-month struggle.
Fire, an earthquake on fire. It all seems.
Now, you've been around for a while. You've been making music for a while. You've had three main projects, right? So For the Good Guys and the Bad Guys, Perennial, and now Heaven, no.
Closer to Hell.
Yeah. Out of those three, have you noticed your creative process change?
I think that what I'm looking for now is the immediacy and faith, belief, confidence of For the Good Guys and the Bad Guys. Like, I was young when I made that project. Some of those songs I wrote when I was 21, 22, young. And at the time, I felt so strongly about my purpose in music. I was coming at it from a place of, I am healing myself from symptoms of PTSD, from a sexual assault that I experienced when I was around when I was 18, from an ex-boyfriend. And I believed so strongly that I could heal myself with music. And I created that proof for myself by starting that band, playing those shows, meeting other people with the same experience and sharing in that. Also, writing songs is a great kind of container to process, because there was no way to just sort of deny or downplay the experience. It was like, it was the thing that I really needed at the time. And the faith that I had in that process, the proof that I created to justify that faith is sort of like, there was a strong connection to purpose, which made it really easy. There were not that many kind of personal hangups and barriers in the way. I wasn't judging what I was doing as much as I have since. I wasn't picking apart my lyrics so much or going over vocal takes as much. It was more about the immediate emotional sketch, if I could put it that way. Perennial was a little bit more, I was operating from a place of, I have this deadline, I have this opportunity to get something done. And there are stories that I want to tell, but I feel like we just didn't bring it all the way home on that one, and in every single case, on every single song. And for Closer Than Hell, there are, Maddie was an immediate one. Like, I wrote that one in 15 minutes because the emotion was so strong. It was like, oh, this boy was so much nicer to me than my current boyfriend. Gotta get out. Like, that was really clear. And so returning to clarity has been an important part of this process. And then when that fails, discipline, which I've avoided for a long time, but it resulted in Barbed Wire and Untitled. So we have Max to thank for that.
Do you have a personal favorite among those projects?
Each one taught me different lessons, for sure. I think the song New Orleans on Good Guys, Bad Guys, I could barely play guitar at the time, but there's something, again, really like fresh and loose and open about that recording. We did everything on that EP live off the floor in 2 days. So there was no time to second guess anything. And New Orleans, I think it must've been 12:30, like midnight, past midnight. We had the last little bit of studio time. We left the acoustics on for last. So I'm just there on a stool with the guitar. And I just have such a precious, fond memory of that whole project and the story of that song, of my gratitude for music as a tool for healing. And that same place, that same feeling of being in a cocoon and expressing something really personal and right, showed up again in Maddie and in Heavenly One. So I feel really grateful to have that as an anchor point whenever I'm not sure, as a barometer of whether I'm actually being honest in my songwriting or if I'm trying to contrive something, you know?
Yeah. I feel like as a listener too, you can hear that honesty and you can feel the authenticity. So
yeah. And it's hard because you have to kind of get past the wall of shame, because you're like, I think my fans are expecting this from me, but what I actually have to offer right now is this other thing. And is that going to go over well? But I think being honest is the kind of most faithful, respectful thing I could do for the people that have supported me. So
yeah, I completely agree.
Hey.
Are you self-taught on the guitar then? Yeah.
I didn't go to music school. I went to school for painting and sculpture.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I dropped out to start the band. But I've been very lucky to have had very generous musicians around me in the band, especially in the early days, to show me how to tune my guitar, to tell me which pedal I needed for that, and really guide me on how to lead a band, how to arrange a song, and everything in between. So I learn on the job. I make my mistakes on stage, and I learn in the fire, so to speak.
Now, your voice then, is that also self-taught? Really?
Yeah.
So I did choir growing up. And listening to your voice, it just sounds so like full and smooth. Whoa. Is that just natural? Like, what?
No. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
My mom and dad filmed a lot of me and my sister growing up when we were small. And the early videos of me singing, I'm tuneless and tone deaf, and it just like frogs sound awful. But somewhere around like when I discovered Kelly Clarkson when I was seven, I was like, oh my God, I have to learn how to sing properly. And so I learned how to carry a tune a little bit just from listening. And then in my teens, I discovered Etta James, Otis Redding, Amy Winehouse, Adele, Joss Stone, and Aretha Franklin, and Ella Fitzgerald. Though, like those voices, yeah. That's when I was like, oh, that's where I belong. So I would listen back on YouTube and rewind little clips of 10 seconds at a time until I could imitate the same run. I would just take it one note at a time until I could imitate that sound. And I did that for hours a day after school, just by pure obsession. And then that took me to my next echelon. And then the next one from there was playing at Honey Martin's in my early 20s. They have no monitors there, so I couldn't hear myself. So I just was like, well, this little wallflower singing isn't going to work here. I have to figure out a way to cut through the loud guitars and drums. So I learned how to pull power just from pure necessity. And then I blew out my voice. And so I had to learn how to moderate. So now the reason I have the ability to go big and then to go really, really paper thin and like thread through in the eye of a needle precise with my volume and my pitch and all of that is just from trial and error over the years, losing my voice, not wanting to lose it at gigs anymore. You can't scream your head off five nights a week. So I had to figure out the moments in the show to let it all out. And then everywhere else, I'm moderating a little bit more and finding other ways to connect emotionally without resorting to screaming.
Now, my last question, which is kind of fitting because you're also wearing red.
Yes.
This. You wear like this iconic red outfit in almost all the promo for this EP. Is there a reason for that?
Mm-hmm. There are a couple of reasons. One, I felt like it tied in with the Closer Than Hell thing.
Oh, yeah.
Love kind of being the thread there. And the, Maddie, the baby bell, silly as it is, the baby bell cheese was a big inspiration for the outfit. But rather, it was a coincidental symbol because my friend Monse, who took the photos for the cover art, we went thrifting looking for the right outfit. I thought I had one that I really liked. And she's like, I think we can go more iconic than like denim on denim, which was my idea. And she found this like this red cropped turtleneck and then these red corduroy pants in opposite sections of the Salvation Army on Sherbrooke and NDG. And she's like, look at this. And I tried it on, fit like a glove. And it was just kind of iconic with the braids and the hoops. Yeah. And it just worked. So it just kind of happened in reverse that it works for the themes. And I was kind of after something more playful as well, because the themes about like the love and the relationships and recovering, I feel like it tied in with something whimsical, but also disappointment of expectations. You know, when we're young, we have all these ideas of what our lives are going to look like and we try for it. And some things we get, and some things exceed our expectations. And then sometimes we get absolutely devastatingly let down. And I felt like I was looking for that contrast of brightness and darkness in the imagery. And I feel like that's reflected in the music as well. So we were looking for something that was cohesive and that really stood out against a dark backdrop, if that makes sense.
It totally does. I agree with Monse's artistic input there. It's a very iconic outfit.
She's a genius. Yeah. She's so great.
Okay, so that is the end of my prepared questions.
Yay.
Is there anything that you really want to plug? Something that maybe we didn't get to touch on that you really want to be included and out there?
I suppose I can just say, if you're on the road around Quebec and Ontario, look out because I'm coming to you. And Jazz Fest in Montreal on June 29th, 7:30 p.m. on the TD stage. I have special guests in my show. It's going to be really special, so you should come to that.
Yes, I will be there. Can't wait to see you in June. Thank you so much for doing this. The EP is, I'm just blown away by it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you chatting with me today.
Yeah.
By the hype, and I'm lost inside the mind's flare.
All right, and we're back. So yeah, that was my interview. That was last week. She is such an angel. It was such a pleasure to talk to her. Again, Honora is playing the TD stage at the Jazz Fest June 29th at 7:30 p.m. There will be special guests, but it's all secret. So I am so excited to go. It's free, so you have no excuses to not go and support her. And yeah, again, her EP, Closer Than Hell, is absolutely fantastic. And you can just hear all the love and work that she and Max Frazier have put into it. So yeah. Okay, we still have a little bit of time, so we're going to get into some music. First off, we're going to play another Honora song. This is If Life Were a Movie, and this is off of her album Perennial. And this is when I first discovered who she was. It was part of Papa's email blast to me about, like, I think you'll really like her. And If Life Were a Movie, I played this song all the time. So here it is, and we'll talk about the rest of the music when I come back. Here you go.
No secrets, they'll never breathe a word. Like the moon watching over us, playing in the dirt. Doomed from the start, could it end a different way? If life were a movie, I'll never be happier for you that you found happiness. But I'll never forget how you used to kiss me that way. From dark till day, tangled in heat now, the meaning's lost to us. If walls could talk, we'd have to answer for our love. Doomed from the start, could it end a different way? If life were a movie, I'll never be happier for you that you found happiness, yeah. But I'll never forget how you used to kiss me that way. From dark till day, I'll never be happier for you that you found happiness. But I'll never forget how you used to kiss me that way. From dawn till day.
Into the light, I'm stumbling forward again. And tales of a lifetime haunting me tonight. They can always lead me through the dim when I'm down to my last sip. Down to my last chance. Down to my last silver dollar. Hoping you might take me in. He was a traveler who roamed the Argentine from the Spanish land where he was born. Now I never knew him, but I heard he looked like me. Yeah, and I still feel him in my soul.
take me in, take me in, 'cause I may never see your face again, yeah. Sing so gently through this world. I remember her telling me she loved me all alive, and she's still waiting there, I'm told. While I'm down the mine, and I see a dollar chance.
All right, that was Nice to Each Other by Olivia Dean, and that is her latest single, came out May 30th. I love Olivia Dean. I find her voice so incredible. She is coming to Montreal July 22nd at the Beanfield Theater, so make sure to go get tickets for that. And before that, we had Neil Casal with Silver Dollar. It's a single for a compilation coming out. I don't have much information about that, but that I'm playing for my papa. And then we started that all off with If Life Were a Movie by Hanora. And yeah, go see her at the Jazz Fest. Last time I will say it, but please go. We are nearing the end of the show. I have one last song to play. And I have a little message for Jerry Wong out there in Dorval. Happy birthday. We love you so much. Thank you for everything that you do for us. You are the best. And I just hope you have such a wonderful day. And 65, that's a big year. Anyways, we got to go to DiMaggioni last night, and I got to see Frank, Pete, and Glenn, which was very nice, and I felt like a little celebrity walking in, and there was such good food, and we got to eat cake for my grandpa's birthday. So yeah, Grandpa, I love you so much, and here is I Can't Help Myself by Four Tops for your special day, because I love you, and I know you love Motown, so here you go. See you guys all next week for the Father's Day episode, actually. Yeah. And just have a great week. And all of my fellow high school students who are in exams right now, I'm with you and good luck. Okay. See you all next week. Bye-bye.